Steelman, good evening. A significant good evening.
It feels so significant. Happy anniversary. Sounded
we
so
made
weird.
It.
Yeah, we did.
No, it was beautiful. This is our golden anniversary, you and
Dave.
Me.
Dave, people said we'd never make it to 10. Then they said, oh, you'll never make 25. Here we are on top of the mountain, looking back at 50 episodes of Off the Chain.
Just think of all the ways that we've enriched people's lives and enriched our lives. Many tears have been shed. Laughs have been had. Just joy.
It's hard to pick like a single moment that encapsulates just what these 50 episodes have meant to the world at large. But if I had to pick, I would say, I mean, we had literally, when we announced that this was going to be our 50th episode, probably 3,000 emails with questions, with well wishes, congratulations. And that was just from the Kingdom of Monaco alone. So, I mean, consider, you multiply that by the world's population, it's been millions. It's been hard for our staff to keep up, really.
And I want to just apologize right now. We get so many questions that ask Off the Chain. We haven't done a segment for a while. We just can't keep up. I love the questions. We would love to answer them all. It's just not feasible.
We need to have a little spinoff. Just have some of our interns answering Off the Chain questions 24/7. Get a webcam on. Put them in a locker. But, just answering questions.
But still, do you remember that first episode? It was almost perfect. It was just me talking to you about the Incredible Hulk for about 40 minutes.
Yeah, it was pretty great. It wasn't just the Incredible Hulk. It was Planet Hulk. You explained the whole premise. You explained to me how the Incredible Hulk becomes so incredible. I learned so much. And I think our listeners did, too. I know at least three people that made it maybe 15 minutes into the episode, which was about 12 minutes further than I thought they would get.
There's been a few things that I've really enjoyed. I think that I've liked the fact that we've brought up Bill and Ted's in probably, 50% of our episodes?
Yeah, that's a healthy estimate. And it's important because I think about one of the first segments I invented, and it was the toilet graffiti. Remember we were talking about that?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
One of the great moments that I still see every time I go to the bathroom there is name your poop after a movie, and it still said Bill and Ted's Bogus Adventure. It's still there.
It should say Bogus Journey. Yeah, I remember you being upset about it at the time.
See, these are the things that stick with you, that last. This is our golden episode. We're remembering what really counts.
Another theme that we've gone to the well a lot is talking about sports, but not actually talking about sports.
Yeah, the culture surrounding sports, concepts, ideas, the idea of sports, but not the sports themselves. I love that. That's what I spend most of my time doing. I don't watch sports anymore, but I just read a ton about them. Not about the games themselves, but about the apparatus surrounding it, the cultural apparatus.
And I don't know why that's so intriguing, but to me, I do that with most of my free time. I'm reading something about sports, and maybe I'll watch one basketball game a month or something, and the rest of the time, like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a... I mean, I don't know why we have that in common, but we definitely do have that in common, and it's a good choice.
But still, my probably all-time favorite segment that we do is Lost the Plot, where you describe an action film that you've never seen to me, and it makes my heart so happy.
Dave, do you remember that what first gave you the idea for this and why because I think this was a stroke of genius, and I never imagined it would turn out this good, but where did the idea come from?
I think it's just in our differences. I love crappy action movies, and you've maybe seen one in your entire life, and so I think it just really plays up the differences between us, because if you just did a segment asking me to describe the plot of action movies, I would be very excited, and I would love it. But it's even better making you do it.
I like that, because I think that's sort of how the podcast started. Ariane was tired of you just describing the plot of action movies that you had already watched with her. So you needed someone to tell about these cool movies, and that's cool. You know, Dave, I will say, I think about this. I don't think we've ever talked about it on the podcast, but do you know that I once saw Big Trouble in Little China?
An action film?
Yeah. So I
Wow.
think we're at
Oh.
two, actually.
Yeah, but I know you have a goal this year. You're going to get some diesel in. So,
So here's the
yeah.
thing. I've been thinking about it almost every night after Cedar goes to bed, thinking about, hey, is tonight the night that I'm going to start Triple X and watch it for the first time? And I've almost done it maybe 5 or 6 times. I've pulled out my iPad. I almost opened Netflix. I've even saved it to my queue. But I bet within the next month, before we get to 75 episodes, I'll be able to tell you about Triple X.
And you got to be ready. Yeah, if you watch it unprepared, you're gonna literally crap your pants. So you just got to be ready still. I appreciate that you're preparing your body, your mind, and your spirit for this, 'cause it's what you need to do.
Dave, I also want to say something that I really appreciate as I think back about the last 50 episodes. All the really great Foley effects, the sound effects that you've contributed I mean, there's been slurping through a straw, there's been candy noises. And just before the podcast started, let me show you what I was doing.
Oh, a little bit of candy. Whoa, two candies. And was this in tribute to our 50th episode?
Yeah.
You ate tiny candy bars?
I ate a bunch of tiny candy bars. I had to get my energy up. I had to get my blood sugar spiked. Just had to get hyped. And so this is the way I do it at 9:15 p.m. Oh yeah, you've got
I'm
the
sucking
energy
on
to go the
Gobstoppers
distance.
right now. Yeah. I want people to really experience what I'm tasting as they listen to the podcast.
That's cool. Yeah, so we should have like a contest where we just have listeners guess what Dave was eating at some point during the podcast, and we'll have prizes. And I'm kind of bummed that you're not in your basement with that loud fan anymore, because it sounds pristine in your room now.
I'm sorry. We moved. We relocated. A lot of things have changed over 50 episodes. But
The other
still,
great thing, Dave, I read a bunch of books on your recommendation. And I'm trying to think how I would rank the most important ones in my life. It's a close tie, I would say. Hyperion, I read the first two books in that series. Learning more
really
about the
good.
Shrike and what are they called? The time pyramids, or
I'm shocked you could stop at two books, because as you're journeying into it, you want to understand what the Shrike's doing.
I would like to read more of them. They're on the to-do list. And then I also read the first three or four of the Ringworld books, and I've got a couple more loaded up on deck on my iPad. So next time I get my sci-fi kick, I'm going back to see more Lewis Wu.
And the funny thing is that between the two series, like Hyperion's actually pretty well written, and Ringworld is like they're kind of crappy books, and that's the one that like you that really grabbed you, that you kept going with.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You were so big on the Pearson's Puppeteers.
The super interesting species. We've talked about them before, and I've gotten multiple emails asking for us not to discuss it ever again. So we don't want to go into huge detail, but trust me, if you like bad science fiction, that's awesome. Like Ringworld, Steel read four books.
And I just dipped my toe in the water. There's like, I think 15, I have a file on my computer that has like 60 different books or stories Larry Niven has written. So I'm going to work my way through it. The other thing I wanted to think about, Dave, is I wanted to do a deep dive. You know, I'm into spreadsheets, I'm into numbers, analytics.
Yes,
We
yeah.
stand at 50 episodes. Of those 50, can you think about the people who've passed through our lives, who've passed through our hearts, who came in and enriched our ears? Let's talk about our guests. Let's crunch some numbers here.
Yeah, walk me through it.
The most frequent guest on our show was actually no guest. Dave, this is the 10th time that we've done a show, just you and me, just heart to heart, buddy to buddy.
Well, when our conversations are this intriguing, sometimes it's hard to shoehorn a third person in, because just the back and forth, the quick wit that we have, sometimes people feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, a lot of times. I mean, and if you look, if our first 11 episodes, six of them were just you and I, and it blew people away. I think our numbers skyrocket. And so we said, we got to calm this down. We don't want to take over the internet. We need space for places like TMZ, for People Magazine, to keep their kind of niche on the internet. And so we said, let's calm it down. Let's dilute the water a little bit. And we started bringing guests like Spencer and Jordan and other people on just to mellow it out a bit. And so since those original six episodes, this is only the fourth time that it's been you and I. Our most frequent guests, Spencer's been on 7 times. So about 14% of all of our episodes had Spencer on them.
This is very interesting, Steele. Yeah, go into greater detail, please.
So he was on episodes, and no, I'm just kidding. Jordan was a six-time guest, so those are our leaders. And then we've
Yep.
had two people on three times, seven people on twice, and a full 10 people on once. This is for the trivia buffs, but do you know who's had the briefest but most impactful influence on Off the Chain with Dave and Steele?
The briefest but most impactful?
Yeah.
I don't know. I liked when Oliver came on. Mm. I enjoyed the Stouffer brothers. I've loved all of every single... I want all the guests to come back again.
That was a great diplomatic answer, but I would have to say the briefest cameo appearance was Arianne Jensen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she came on.
For a segment?
Talked about the Tarahumaras.
Tarahumaras?
However you say that word. I was just talking to her earlier. I was like, you want to do another cameo for the 50th episode? And she said no.
Nice. She understands the importance of brand loyalty. You know, keep the brand pure. Yeah, got to be that. And I'd say also we had a brief Elsa appearance from Elsa Gardner. She was in the outtakes on one episode, and I think we got probably a dozen kind of fan mail letters trying to find out more about her and if she could be booked for a voice talent, video games.
And I don't think you listed Jerem Sidwell's daughter on here. She was involved in most of that episode. So.
That's true. That was not actually something Dave was eating. That was actually a child in the room.
But you got some more statistics for us, Steele. What else you want to run through?
Well, Dave, we've had 21 unique guests. Of those 21 unique guests, 14 have been men. 7, surprisingly, have been women. Who knew that we knew 7 women between the two of us? We'll get to that a little bit later. We've had a ton of people on the show, and we're looking forward to bringing you at least 21 new guests in the next 50 episodes. Real popular episodes? You'll never believe this, Dave, but episode 1, most popular episode, we need to get back to our roots. That post on our blog has been visited over 1,500 times.
Yeah, it was hard-hitting, impactful work that we did. So I think we just need to get back to me droning on about comic book characters. That's what the people want.
Yeah. The other thing that was real surprising, our second most popular episode, you would have thought it would have been one of the good ones, like when we had Oliver on or Katie on. But no, in fact, it was not. It was one of the ones with Spencer, where we talked about pickup basketball.
Yeah, I was even bored during that segment. People were listening to that?
I don't know if people listened to it, but it was visited more than 1,000 times. I think probably Google search results for pickup basketball or something, and they stumbled on our site. But it had more than twice as many as the next closest episode. So Spencer's doing something right. And Jordan was our guest on the third most popular episode. So we've had, you know, a bunch of episodes that got visited a lot. I think after I started changing our titling convention, our numbers went back to earth towards reality. And so since we've done that, we average about 40 or 50 hits per episode. So it's nice to know that robots are coming to our site a few times and a couple of humans. So we're keeping it small.
I don't know that the world is ready for what we're doing. Eventually, maybe by the time we hit episode 200, I think people will be ready. And our skills will be honed.
Have you had enough numbers yet, Dave?
I know you have one more section of numbers that's important to you. Talk about the Unchained Melodies data that you got going.
So this was one of my most favorite segments, that we play music every time. This is a passion of yours. It's a passion of mine. It's an outlet for us to talk about music. And we have created a Spotify master playlist that I update every week. It's on our website. You can listen to all the songs that are on Spotify that we featured on the show. Right now, that playlist stands at 221 songs by around 200 unique bands, Dave. And I went through and I crunched the numbers and I said, okay, what are the band names that get played most often by letter? So if you look at the initial letter of all the bands we've played, the most common letter is B. We've played 34 songs by bands whose names start with B.
It's a strong letter, strong sound, ba. You got to respect it.
S comes in next. It's 19. M and C tied with 16. D's got 15. A, R, L, and P with 13 and 12 respectively. So those band names just holding down the fort. But you look, there's some overlooked, some ignored bands. The 5 letters that we have not yet represented, I, Q, X, Y, and Z. And I'm going to do something about that tonight, Dave. I'm going to represent at least one of those letters tonight.
I'm always excited for Unchained Melodies. But still, mostly... I'm excited about doing some of my favorite segments. Okay. Tonight, we're going to do some questions. The questions have been piling up. We're going to pick some of the best ones we've gotten so far that we haven't had time to answer. We're going to do maybe my favorite segment, Lost the Plot. We've got Small Talk. which is important for me to help me out in social situations, and a course on chain melodies and some book wisdom.
Dave, the questions have rolled in. The interns have sorted through them, and we're going to present us several questions from listeners. This first one comes from your old mission area, Dave. It's from Birmingham, mate.
Oh, nice.
It's from Courtney. I don't know if Courtney's a man or a woman. I don't think we need to know. The question is, it's mostly for you, I think, Dave. At the end of the day, what do you see when you look in the mirror?
Oh, man. I see, I think I see fatigue, but I see a genuine happiness in my eyes. So I'm just tired because I'm living life.
Nice. Courtney, man, I love that question. I look in the mirror and I see an aging dad, basically. And I'm real happy with it. Some days I see more of that dad that I wish was there. But most of the time I see, you know, content, tired, happy dad. And it's nice.
And the other thing, Courtney, that I see when I look in the mirror is no details. Like, I don't notice anything happening to my face anymore. Mm. Like, when I was 20, I'd look in the mirror and be like, oh, no. I got a zit coming in. I got these things happening. Now I look in the mirror. My God, my teeth are brushed. There's no boogers hanging out of my nose. Like, I'm good to go.
For me, it's like I have to look to see if there's smoothie on my face, on my nose. Because sometimes I'll go to work and I'll go to the bathroom at like 10. And I'll notice that I've got smoothie on my nose. And I'm like, dang it, how long has that been there?
But in your mid-30s, it doesn't matter. In your 20s, you're like, oh, no, smoothie all day. I'm a jackass. In your 30s, like, ah, smoothie.
At least it wasn't like spinach in my teeth. All right, Dave, next question. This is from Jay Stopher, Galveston, Texas.
Oh, yeah.
It's a hypothetical question, of course, as they always are with old Jay Stopher. But he writes, if my water heater is broken, should I even consider taking a shower? Mind you, I live in Galveston.
Galveston? You shouldn't be too far from the beach. You got showers at the beach you could use.
Yeah.
So really, you don't have to consider taking one at home. I would do one of the bathing suit beach showers. That's what I'd do.
I would say drop by a high school, see if the locker room's open, see if you can get some of that powder soap they use, you know. Just take a bucket, fill it full of powder soap, have it be a beach bucket so it looks all natural. Go down to the beach shower, douse yourself up with that gritty powder soap, lather yourself down. No one's going to care. Yeah. Consider taking a shower. You don't have to do it at home. There's a lot of public places that you can shower in.
Yeah, the options are almost endless. Public showers, public gyms. At the high school, just shower at the high school. I'm sure they'd be comfortable with you doing that.
Yeah. Say that you're, you know, just testing the facilities.
What else we got, Steele?
Sal, Providence, Rhode Island.
Oh, boy.
This one, I think he may have confused our site with a popular competitor. But he writes, I got a wicked rash in my groin area. It is friggin' wicked.
That doesn't even sound like a question, Steele.
I think I get medical advice. I don't know if it's bragging. I don't know if he's asking for help. I don't know.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, I do some medical work on the side when I'm not doing off the chain. You can have lots of rashes in your groin area, but the top two, really the number one, I'm thinking fungal. Get some antifungal stuff on that, Sal. If that doesn't work, steroids. Steroids will chase it away. If that doesn't work, you probably have some type of parasite.
Wow. So parasites cause groin rashes.
Well, not like a parasite. I guess like an insect. Oh. Like some type of infestation.
My first thought would have been heat rash, obesity. You know, he's just a lot of friction happening there. You know, like in the summertime, if you're running around a lot and you're a little heavier, you get the burning in the inside of the legs, and then you get the butt heat rash, and it's just so uncomfortable. I mean, that's one of the banes of my existence, so it could be that. I don't know what the solution is except, like, leave your underwear in the freezer and half an hour before you wear it.
So there's two – actually, I mean, why not combine antifungal, ointment, that stuff, and frozen underpants? Yeah. You should be good.
Sal, problem solved. Unless that was a brag, in which case, congrats, buddy. You're doing great. This is from Patricia, Oklahoma City. This is a bit of a downer, Dave. Are you guys serious about all this Vin Diesel stuff? I mean, are you really into him? I really can't tell. Listen, Patricia, do you not listen to this show?
Patricia, of course we love Vin Diesel.
Hold
on.
We
talked about him.
Why are you using we, Dave?
I think that I can include you in this, okay. Steele. I think after 50 episodes, you finally, you understand, you're on board.
I was thinking it was an opportunity. It isn't just you're not just speaking for you and me. When you use we, I thought you were referring to the human race, the species.
It's true. Have a conversation with anyone, and bring up any Vin Diesel movie.
They don't even have to speak English. They don't have to. No. I mean, yeah.
Just say Vin Diesel, and like people's eyes light up, smiles. Hand gestures of cars going quickly. The whole world brightens when that man just appears. And so, of course, Patricia, we love Vin Diesel. And by that, I do mean, like Steele said, the human race.
The other thing I'll add that it kind of adds to this point, Dave, is that my brother-in-law went on a big vacation. He'd been working in his job for 5 years, and the deal is if you make it through 5 years, they give you an expense-paid trip for like a month anywhere in the world. So he decided that he was going to start, and he was going to go to Kazakhstan. He starts in Kazakhstan, yeah. And then he goes to Azerbaijan, and then he ended up in Turkey. So he had a great trip. Uh-huh. But this is what he did. He said, you know, I'm going to try to learn a little bit of the local languages, but if I get stuck, he just printed out a 3x5 headshot of Vin Diesel and carried it in his wallet. So anytime things got confused or he's having problems, he just pulled out the picture, showed it to whoever he's with, and instantly it was like a passport to getting help, to getting free meals, to getting free drinks, to success. He met all these local people. They just showed him around everywhere, and they just hugged him, embraced him. He had like 5 or 6 marriage proposals. It was amazing. They let him in for free to these Russian baths, and they carried him on their shoulders singing songs in Azeri. It was amazing. He had the greatest trip. He ate horse meat for free everywhere he went, and it was all because he was carrying around this photo of Vin Diesel.
It's beautiful. I was really hoping that you were going to say he took a Fast and Furious tour of the world and he stopped in every location where a Fast and Furious movie has been made. But that's good, too.
He's saving that for the 10-year when they do the all-expense trip for 2 months. He wants to really savor it.
Okay. That's understandable.
Another important question. Do you think it's possible to win a girl's heart with your dance moves? And if so, what moves in particular would be the most effective? This is from Kalman, Scottsdale, Arizona.
That's pronounced Kalman, I understand. And the answer is yes, dance moves work. And I say go with the classic. You don't have to do this twist. Dap stuff. That wasn't exactly what I was going to say.
I'm sorry. Really?
Yeah. I've been listening to tons of the Beatles lately. And Twist and Shout, we've probably listened to it like 15 times in the past 2 weeks. I can't get it out of my head. So yeah. You put that song on and you start just doing your twist to it.
Oh
yeah, it's
come
gonna
on,
go well,
baby. I'm thinking Chubby Checker style. That's how you do it.
No, it's come on, come on, come on, baby. Now, come on, baby.
Yeah, classic. So Kalman. Which one is it?
Kalman.
Dave thinks you can win a girl's heart with the twist. Dave knows you can win the girl's heart. I don't know if it's thinks or knows.
It's knows. I've done it several times. I've had to stop twisting since I got married. It's caused some issues.
You've had to stop twisting, huh? All right, next question. I got it in, Dave. Zing.
Boom.
This is an important question from Peter, Columbia, Missouri. Yeah. Do you guys know any women? ?
I think we confirmed it earlier in the episode. We know at least 7 women.
Yeah. Come on. So, Peter, 7 there you different go. Women, no less. And I don't know what Peter's deal is. Is that a question asked out of desperation? Is he hoping for us to play matchmaker? Or is it just because this podcast is often a sausage fest? I don't know.
Steele, you went over, I think it's a follow-up. Peter asked us one a couple months ago.
Oh, yeah.
That we never had an opportunity to respond to. He says, I am 30, of average looks, and I'd say above average intelligence.
Doubt it.
Got a college degree and a good job, but I'm terrified of talking to ladies. I would love to have a girlfriend and even get married, but it seems like it could never happen. Where do I start?
Well, I think you got to look at the root. What's this terror coming from? Why be terrified of talking to ladies? They're great. They're interesting. They're fun at conversation. It's not about winning a conversation. It's not about getting anything out of it. It's saying, this is a person I don't yet know. There's a stranger. They contain a universe. I'd like to explore that universe. I want to ask some questions. I want to get to know this person. It can be terrifying meeting new people, but it's almost always worth it. And that's where you got to start with. You don't start by thinking, this woman could be my girlfriend. I could marry this woman. You think, this is a human being. I'm interested.
And I genuinely think that's a great tip, but just definitely don't start the conversation with, "I would like to explore your universe." I don't know what that would imply to the lady, but Peter, yeah, you got to relax a little bit. If Twist and Shout's playing, you got to twist.
And
You
I'm
just got.
saying, if you're twisting, I don't see what's wrong with saying, "I want to explore your universe." You taking notes? You writing this down?
The baby monitor just went on because the girls are going to bed. Still, like genuinely, I used to have some serious confidence issues even talking to like anybody, and I don't think I spoke to the girls like ever. And it was sad, it was hard, but I think it's just kind of like incremental progress. You have to take steps. You have to make it happen. If you just stay complacent with where you're at, that's where you're going to stay. Any kind of change you want to make in your life, you have to start taking steps toward it right away. Otherwise, Peter, you're going to end up writing questions to like a podcast asking if they know any women.
Yeah. And those are dark days, man. Those are dark days. So basically, journey of 1,000 miles, it starts with a single step. First stop, be interested in other people. Ask them questions about themselves. Start to share a little bit about yourself, and mostly good things will happen. I'm not saying you're going to find a girlfriend, you're going to get married, but at least you'll find out about other people. And that in itself is a good reward.
I'm looking through this list of questions. I got a couple that I see from Greg
Oh
from
man,
Pat Kong, New Jersey.
that guy writes us every week. He's so reliable. Greg, buddy, glad to finally announce you on the show.
It's basically always the same question, just with different subjects. He writes Desert Island, which
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's the game. Like, what would you bring to the desert island? And the first one he's got here is three fruits. Go. What's the
Boom.
three fruits that you would have for the rest of your life on a desert island?
Mango, orange, pineapple. Boom.
Apples, bananas, and some form of melon.
Ooh.
A melon.
You want no one to ever rescue you or visit your desert island, huh, Dave? They're like, "Oh, shit, all I got's apples and melons." Oh, wait, bananas? Even worse. We're out of here.
Really, it would just be apples. I eat an apple every day. I love apples.
What's your species? What's your apple variety?
Oh, jeez. The best, obviously. And now that I'm in a small town, they've priced me out of it. It's a Honey Crisps. They're so good.
Crisps. I'm partial to the Crips Pink Ladies. I like those, and I like the old Granny Smiths.
Pink Ladies, that's kind of my fallback because they're significantly cheaper than a Honey Crisp. So that's my number two.
You know,
So really,
Greg.
I would just bring three kinds of apples to the desert island. That's mostly what I'd do, Greg.
What can you tell me about Hop It Kong, Greg's hometown?
It's Hopat Kong.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of the North Vietnamese city.
I don't know too much about it. I'm sure Greg will write us, let us know. Tell us, I don't know. Hey, Greg, how about, here's a challenge to you. The three best places to go to in HopatCon. Just
Go.
let us know. This is just one. Desert Island, three items of clothing. Go.
Desert Island?
Yep.
Okay. Obviously, you want a thin, long sleeve shirt.
Yes.
You want a sun hat.
Yes.
And you want swim trunks.
Yes. I agree. I want my shirt to be a button up. I want it to be casual but nice. And the swim trunks, I want them to also something that you could wear going out to like a restaurant, but you can get wet. And then
Board shorts, basically. Floral print billabongs.
And then I'm gonna forego the hat and go tank top so that I can
Oh.
just really just let it hang out sometimes.
And I don't think that's what people mean when they talk about letting it hang out, Dave. I think they mean board shorts. I actually don't think I'd really choose a hat. I hate hats. I'd probably pick something for my feet.
A sandal of some sort.
I was thinking clown shoes, just to give my look down and chuckle every once in a while. Like, I may be stuck on a desert island, but those are hilarious.
Yeah, keep it lighthearted while you're eating your mango,
Yeah.
wishing you had a banana.
That's never gonna happen, Dave. Never. We got something from the old P. Mitchells. You remember old P. Mitchells from the San Francisco?
Oh, yeah.
This guy's a bit of a
Great
music
fan.
nut, and he says, "Okay, if you had a time machine, a phone booth, you could travel back in time, go to any concert ever, what would it be?"
Oh, boy. See, it's hard. I was talking about how I've been listening to the Beatles a lot lately. I've watched like some documentaries about them, so I can't think about anything else. So I'd want to go back to like an old Beatles show, like maybe one of those that they played. I think it's called The Cavern. Like they were just moderately famous before they had a hit, and it looked awesome.
A skiffle band in Liverpool?
They'd moved on from skiffle at that point. I don't even know what skiffle is, but I know that they'd moved on. And Ringo's in the band. I don't want to see Pete Best. I have no interest in
Seriously.
that.
Yeah, that guy's the worst. So here's what I'd do. I'm going to see
Yeah.
Odelay era Beck. Full on show. Everybody's going nuts. And I want it to be like the first time. I don't know if this is Odelay era, but the first time he plays Deborah. Because that was like a live concert staple for years before Midnight Vultures. And that would be amazing.
Do you envision this being like the set closer? Like, this is it. He's playing Deborah. And yeah, is that happening?
Yeah.
That
Because how can you play
sounds
another
great.
song after that ends? The first time that you drop that song, basically, the time machine would just take off on its own after that.
Well, you'd be put in like a Groundhog Day situation. Anytime you go in the time machine, you're just going back to the start of the concert.
Yeah, it's like, you know when they have spell correct and it's like, did you mean to type this? Every time you try to dial a number, it'd be like, did you mean to dial this? And it would just take you back to Beck's first performance of Deborah.
Actually, I think that was the plot of what Bill and Ted's 3 was going to be, but it just never got off the ground.
Dynamic smart search, huh? That's awesome. Well, those are some great questions. I think we had one more from Pamela,
Yeah.
Hackettstown, just up the road
Oh.
from Hoppet Kong
Yeah, not far.
in New Jersey. She said, Westworld's going to happen, right? How much longer do I have to wait? What is Westworld?
Westworld. It's an amusement park where ultra-realistic humanoid robots are used to entertain the people at attending the park. So there's like a West World where you get to pretend you're in the Wild West, Roman world, all those kind of things. So yes, it will happen. But my suggestion would be, Pamela, to never go. I would wait forever because it is going to go bad. The robots are going to turn and kill everyone that's there. It happens every time. So it's going to happen, Pamela. I'd say in the next 52 to 100 years, and everyone's going to be slaughtered at the amusement park.
So you can think about who you might want to invite. You could buy your complimentary pass to Westworld, but do not under any circumstances go yourself. It's like lambs to the slaughter, basically, Westworld.
So for the next segment, Steele, I thought that we'd go ahead and make the announcement that we've been waiting for.
Nice.
This is lost the plot. We're going to talk about an action movie, but something we're just going to throw out there so everybody knows. Steele is screenwriting the next Die Hard film, Die Hard 6.
I'm in the biz. I'm in the biz.
They've hired him. They're excited. They read all his poetry. They've listened to this podcast and they thought this guy knows action movies. So, Steele, I was hoping you'd just kind of share what you were planning for Die Hard 6, of course, starring Bruce Willis.
Well, do you want me to talk a little bit about screenwriting software first? Because that's what I've been really obsessed with. If anybody out there is listening and you're thinking about you want to get into the biz like I've been getting into, I can't recommend Final Draft strongly enough. It's a great document organizing structure. You get a lot of screenwriting, like beginning screenwriters get in there and they're like, well, how do I format dialogue? How do I do my offstage directions? How do I give director's notes? Just trust me, it's all there. Final Draft. Down, buy it
Oh,
today.
yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now that we got that out of the way, I want to talk a little bit about Die Hard 6. Die Hard 6 is going to change filmmaking as we know it, Dave. And I know a lot of
I'm
people,
excited.
you hear that say about every movie. You hear it's, I mean, every time Pauly Shore's got a new movie coming out, they're like, well, obviously, this is going to change filmmaking forever. But this is the time that we're really going to do it. And it's actually because we're casting Pauly Shore as in the lead role. And here's the basic
What?
idea. Yeah.
Wait, what are we doing with Bruce?
Well, Bruce is in it, but wait, man.
Okay.
Spoiler alerts.
Okay.
Okay. So
Okay.
here's the
Okay.
thing. Opening scene. It's like a dissolve open, and it's just a frozen tundra, and you see a
Oh, yeah.
dark speck on the horizon, and the camera does this slow pan and then like an instant fast zoom. And you realize that this speck is actually a car that's broken down. Late 60s Plymouth, distinctive fins, nice architecture of the car, but it's not running. And there's nothing for like miles around because you've established that in the opening shot. The trunk's popped open, and there's a guy. You can see him. You're coming around from the back and just see him. He's leaning over the hood of the car. It's clear he's got battery problems. And he looks up, puts his hands over his cheeks, and just goes, "Oh no, what am I gonna do?" And it's Pauly Shore. And then the screen goes to black. And so this is one of those things, and then it says, does the credits or whatever, and then the camera comes back on, and you're looking at like an aerial view of underneath his hood, and it's actually a car battery, you know, the Die Hard battery series, Die Hard batteries, car batteries.
Okay, so you got like a promotional deal in the works with them. Okay.
Big time product placement. Batteries Plus is coughing up like 5-6 figures to sponsor this movie. So essentially, it's about winter preparedness. The moral, I mean, the thing that we want everybody to get out of this is how important it is to have jumper cables in your car, basically at all times. But what happens is it's kind of like reverse chronology. So you start and you think that's going to be the start of the movie, but that's actually the last scene. And so the whole plot of Die Hard 6 is getting Pauly Shore to the place where he's out in the middle of nowhere in the winter, surrounded by tundra, and trying to figure out like how to get his car started again.
The flashback to start the movie, you're taking steps.
So the flashback to start the movie, and here's how the film starts. So you remember how Die Hard 5 ended?
Yes, yeah.
Just describe it for me for a few seconds.
Yeah, Bruce Willis and his son, they were able to stop the terrible Russian guy from, I think he was getting like enriched plutonium or something.
And they stopped him by doing something very effective.
Yeah, they die hard. I think they blew up everything. And they killed the guy. And Bruce Willis, you know, their relationship was healed, and they were able to once again feel like father and son and look for further adventures.
Well, here's the thing. In Die Hard 6, the story opens, and you can see that Bruce Willis's son is really wrestling with something. And it becomes clear in the first couple of minutes that it's his sexuality, essentially. Years and years, there's a lot of pressure on him from John McClane to be a womanizer, to objectify women. And he had tried it. You know, he did the club, and he tried to bury his feelings with alcohol and a lot of MDMA. Mm. You know, it's a club drug, ecstasy. And he just never could do it. And he knew all the time that he was wrestling with the secret. And it felt really terrible to him. He just, I can't do this. And eventually, he's out. He's going to a comedy show. He's at a club. And he just realizes that this comic is making him laugh like he's never laughed before. And underneath the humor, it's more than just this guy is funny. He's looking at this comic and he says, there's something else underneath this. It's raw. It's primal. It's attraction. In fact, I think this is what real love feels like. He doesn't know a lot about comedy.
There's like a vibration in the air. He feels it.
And he's like, I don't know a lot about comedy. I got to search this guy, find out who he is. So he goes to Bing, and he looks him up on Bing. And little does he know, the stand-up comic was Pauly Shore.
Oh, Pauly. He's still doing it, huh?
Yeah. And so the younger McClane realizes that he has deep feelings of romantic love for Pauly Shore, which basically he has in common with like 80% of America, right?
He's a handsome comedian.
Yeah.
I just wish he'd grow his hair back out. Mate, if you could put that in the script, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, I'll file it away in my – there's a little section for notes in Final Draft or whatever the program I had said was called. So I'll put it away in my little notes, ideas. I'll put it in my ideas file. The thing is, Pauly Shore is not interested in the younger McClane. And so it becomes a dangerous kind of stalker situation. And eventually they engineer this situation where Pauly Shore is stranded in the middle of the desert or the middle of the tundra with no battery. And he's going to contrive to come by and rescue him. And then he's going to take him to a remote cabin, and they'll spend a week there. And eventually they'll fall in love. And that's Die Hard 7. I haven't written the script yet.
So a couple notes just for me. I'd like to see a little bit more Bruce Willis in it.
Well, he's the stern, disapproving father. He's got some, you know, powerful, emotive acting without saying much, because, you know, he doesn't have to say much. It's you show him.
And I think also you have to be careful with the stalker premise. Like, is it going to turn super creepy? Is Die Hard 7 going to be like one of those Jennifer Lopez dramas where where Pauly Shore's trying to get away from this?
No, he really does fall in love. This is like... Okay. They do a lot about gay conversion therapy. This is the opposite. like, because it clearly doesn't work to do gay conversion therapy, but the premise of Die Hard 7 is that straight conversion therapy, like, it does work. If you kidnap a popular comedian, hold them in a cabin for a week, and you're charismatic and helpful enough, they will realize that, that love is possible, and not and, and that, you know, they can convert them. And so it works, and it's like a tender, it's basically a propaganda film.
I think that it's going to do really well. But if you want charisma, you're going to have to recast Bruce Willis's son. The guy's like a rock. I'm sorry, Steele. I mean, work with him. See what you can
do. We're thinking about Channing Tatum.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Or is it Tatum Channing? Which one is it? Tanning Channing?
Two last names. You want to go. Stuff. Yeah, he's super handsome. I think it'd work. So there you have it, guys. Sneak peek of Die Hard 6. And I hope you keep getting work, Steele. I'm really happy for you.
Yeah. I mean, final draft has been worth every penny. I'll say that.
So
that was like our worst Lost the Plot. I'm really failed us on the 50th episode. I was trying to make it action, but I don't have any good action ideas. Except gay kidnapping plots.
Yeah, you turn every one of these into a gay kidnapping case every single time now, Steele.
It's just the stories that need to be told. You just don't see them enough at Sundance.
No. And they don't get a general release. You're not seeing these in the theaters. But with Die Hard 6 as the title, you're going to see this in every theater
and
across
the
country.
Everybody's got this negative view of stalking and kidnapping. And in fact, I think the studies show that most stalker kidnappings end really happily, like with real true love. It just takes people a time to warm up to it.
Especially when it's hypersexualized. I mean, that's, you want to put that in the mix for sure.
That's what I'm trying to give the people, you know, just an accurate portrayal of how the world works.
I think thus far with the 50th episode's going great. I think we're giving people a real peek into what Off the Chain has been all about. Let's go to our strength there. We're just going strength to strength. Strength, small talk.
Dave, I've been wanting to talk to you about this for a long time.
Okay.
Sometimes these situations happen and you're just like, this conversation needs something big. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, you're like, the room stalled out, conversation stalled out, you're about to lose the person's attention, and you're like, you really have to go to the well and bring out something life-stopping that just they need to know about. And this time, I think we want to back small talk up, not just with the stories, but with the challenge.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the challenge is we're going to share a story with each other, and the challenge is before we record episode 51 or 52, you have to use this small talk subject in an actual conversation with someone, preferably at work, preferably patient-client kind of relationship, medical advice, whatever. But you've got to use it and then report back. How'd it work?
Okay. Yeah, let's do this. I'm interested to hear your subject.
Oh, well, you want me to start here? I read a great article in GQ. It's a magazine recently. And there is an Iranian-born surgeon based in L.A., of course. His name is James Ellist. And he is a hero, and a true American hero. A lot of men struggle with feelings of inadequacy. They think, they look at their penis, their member, and they think it's below average. It just is inadequate, and they feel all sorts of feelings surrounding it. And so James Ellist, he's an ingenious man. He's a medical inventor. He's a, you know, basically a problem solver. He has developed something called the Penuma. I think it's pronounced Penuma. It's a silicone penis implant. You know, they've been doing breast augmentation for years with silicone. And now he has a penis implant. He's the only person that's approved to use it by the FDA. Mm. He's inserted it in about 1,300 men. It comes in three sizes, large, extra large, and double XL, because nobody wants a medium or a small. And what it is they basically make an incision. They fold the skin back because it's really loosely attached. So it's like basically just hanging on by the foreskin. And then he attaches, he puts like a sheath around the penis. Mm. And it's silicon and it's a couple of inches long or wide. So it really, its primary emphasis is to increase girth. But because it's got a bit of weight to it, it's also going to increase length. You're going to hang down lower while flaccid. And so there's got all these testimonials, all these guys talking about how it's really made a huge difference for them psychologically and performance-wise. They don't feel that much of a different sensation. They feel like they have greater control over ejaculation, though, which is a nice side effect for some of them. And they report that many of them don't ever tell their partners. You know, this is just like the partners don't have to know. They don't have to guess this. It's just a kind of boost. There's probably a dozen times a day when this kind of information would be useful, would normally come up in conversation. And now you have something of substance to contribute.
So you're suggesting like maybe after I do a rectal exam on a patient, yeah, just checking the prostate, like, yeah, and something else to think about, guys.
You ever heard of the Panuma? It's a friend of mine, James. I make a referral. You're going on vacation to LA, just want to pop in. You have to abstain from sex for several weeks afterwards, but then, you know, after a few weeks, it heals up and you're good to go. You're a new man. I don't think there's any choice of colors or flavors. I think it's all just standard, but.
Yeah, this is like, you're like dropping an anvil on the conversation. Boom, guys! The party just got started. Hanuma!
Yeah, you should just think of all the opportunities he really had for naming this thing. He went very, very non-controversial, non-exciting, I mean, there was so much potential. You could have named this so many things, but he went with Panuma.
I think he's named it well. I think it's great. All the thoughts I have, I'm not going to share. I can't handle it. I'll just say, when you say that he's inserted it in 1,300 men, there's a few ways that could go.
I meant the implant, Dave. So this doctor has inserted his implant in over 1,000 men. They think that he may be patient zero.
All right. Well, there's our taste of penis humor for. I don't think we've done a lot of penis humor for quite some time. So
I don't understand what's humorous about this, Dave. This is a serious subject, and it's important for over 1,000 of our peers.
If you want to talk seriously, I'm sure it's really helped those guys psychologically. I'm sure that's great.
Like I don't want to talk seriously though.
No, let's talk. Let's get into this. All right. Well, I've got a much better thing to share with everybody. I think this is more important. So NBA 2K, have you ever played this video game?
You know, I haven't played it. I was a big fan of the EA Sports franchise.
Yeah, me too. NBA Live was what I spent my teen years playing. Well, NBA 2K, it's happening. It's what's happening now in basketball video games. You want to be on the cover of it if you're an NBA player. Mm-hmm. And if you love the NBA, this is what you're playing. This is what you're doing at home. Terrific game. Everybody's on board except for a handful of people. NBA 2K is being sued right now still.
What?
Yeah. This wonderful video game franchise that gives so much, there's people that are trying to take from it.
Hold on. They're suing because the basketball action is too realistic?
That's the first thing I thought. They thought like they're spending too much of their time playing such a wonderful game that they can't get outside and enjoy life anymore.
They're like,
but that's
hey,
not actually the...
We're unable to differentiate between whether we're playing a video game or whether we're watching a live NBA game. It's just baffling to us.
And that case actually got thrown out of court. This is a different case.
Oh,
the
no.
Judge just didn't. So they're being sued for copyright infringement due to player tattoos that they've reproduced to exact perfection in the game.
Wow. So they didn't get intellectual property clearance from the tattoo artists?
No, so specifically a number of players, but LeBron James and some of his tattoos, some of, I think, a Kobe Bryant tattoo that's in the game. The tattoo artists are suing the game for not getting the rights to show the tattoo in the game.
That's awesome. Wouldn't it be great if you worked for NBA 2K and your job was to do, like, tattoo licensing? That was, like, your sole job?
Well, that dude's fired now. That dude dropped. Yeah, he screwed up big time.
You leave it
the
to
ball
an intern.
Was dropped. No, you need to be making six figures to take care of that.
Mm.
But what's so interesting to me about this is that you can have a tattoo on your body that you can't. Like, because LeBron James is obviously given his okay to be in this game. He, you know, the NBA Players Association gets money for NBA 2K being produced. Like, there's money directly going to LeBron James.
His image but, rights, right?
Yeah. But he doesn't. He can't have a tattoo on his arm show up. Like, he doesn't have control of the tattoo on his arm.
Yeah, man. Your body's a canvas and it's someone else's art. They still own that art.
That seems insane. I obviously don't have any tattoos. I have no interest in it. This is just another story. Like, hey, don't get a tattoo in case you get famous one day and you're in a video game. You're screwed.
They're going to airbrush you. That explains a lot with Kevin Durant. You've seen those photos, right? Where his arms, anything that shows outside of his jersey is totally tattoo free. But they showed him in Summer League without a shirt on. He's got tattoos all over his tank top area.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, he's inked. But not anywhere that shows outside of his jersey. And it's probably because he had a time machine. He traveled into the future and saw this would happen.
That's the only explanation.
The
It all
only
goes back
explanation.
to Bill and Ted. But
Wow,
so
dude,
Steele
that's an
did that
incredible
up.
story. What's the odds of success for this? Is this a real lawsuit that's going somewhere?
Yeah, I think it's a real lawsuit. I mean, they own the rights to those tattoos, to those images. So I'm sure it's going to be settled out of court, and NBA 2K is going to have to pay these tattoo artists. So LeBron James doesn't own his arms, someone else does.
The other thing I think that would be perfectly fitting for this is if NBA 2K is forced to release a patch, which is literally a patch. Hey! You know, it just covers all the tattoos up.
We'll see. I think everybody's going to be following this case with bated breath and just seeing what happens. Yeah.
There would
I
be.
wonder what LeBron thinks about it.
I don't know. You know, when they used to have design a player features, or you could like design a guy, I think you used to be able to like choose from a couple of tattoos you could place on their body. I wonder if they're going to do like get tattoo artists and license their work to appear as tattoos in the game. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I'd like to be that artist. I need
Build the
to
feature. Build
work
the
on my
tattoo
tat
feature.
drawings.
Wild, wild. So we got two things. We got a challenge. At some point, you need to talk about the Panuma, and at some point, I'm going to talk about NBA 2K tattoo legal imbroglios. Sounds great.
Yeah, let's do it.
We've done 50 episodes, and we're going to take the
Yes.
long view here, the long view of sound, and we're going to talk about music that's still going to matter 50 years from now. Each of us is going to pick a song that we are still going to be listening to in 50 years, and then pick a song that we're pretty sure the other person is going to be listening to in 50 years. So lay it on me, Dave.
I thought about this and I went with something that came out almost 50 years ago and is still
Classic.
relevant and fresh and just beautiful. I've been talking about the Beatles all episode, so why stop? I want to play the track Something by George Harrison.
Talk about getting sued, Dave. I had to fade that one out quick because I'm more worried about getting sued than I've ever been before about playing a Beatles song on our podcast. Wow. We
Yeah, you go
always
on
clear our
the
rights, of course.
internet still, like you go to YouTube and you want to watch a Beatles video, there's like four available. And it's like the four that have been cleared by the Beatles. You can't find anything else anywhere.
That's a lovely song, and that I don't know the story of the guitar licks on that piece, but that's one of those iconic, like, such a, I mean, that's a song that'll never get old.
It's such a beautiful love song. Yeah, it's 50 years on now, almost from when it was released, and it still sounds so good.
Dave, wouldn't you know it? It's crazy that we thought about stuff. This is Spencer's point about like things that have already survived for a long time are likely to keep surviving. My song that I first thought of is going to be 50 years old next year. It was recorded by an artist who died in the lake just outside of my office. Otis Redding died in a plane crash in Lake Monona.
Oh no,
Yeah.
Otis.
And this song was released just after his death. He had recorded it just before dying. It's probably my favorite song of all time. And when I'm 80 something years old, I'm going to be listening to Sitting on the Dock of the Bay by Otis Redding.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia.
And it'll be a great soundtrack to being 80. Like, I'd love to just sit there and be 80 listening to that. That's great.
Exactly. Like, just imagine it. If you could sing that song and mean it at the age of 80-something, it would be a life well lived, you know? And then if you could still whistle at the end of that song at the 83 or whatever, you'd have it made. You'd be like, did it. I still have my teeth.
Well, Steele, you picked a great song, but I picked a song that I think means a little bit more to you. And if you're not listening to this in 50 years, then you're dead. That's all I can say. This is, of course, I don't even know if I need to introduce it, but it's Bandidos by The Refreshments.
So just how far down do you want to go? Well, we could talk it out over a cup of Joe, and you could look deep into my eyes like I was a supermodel.
Dang, Dave, you know me well.
Nailed it.
Man, oh man. The thing I love most about that song is how long and intricate that kind of like build up chorus is. It's like Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the United Federation of Planets. Like, there's a lot of syllables in there, and they're singing them at like high intensity. That's hard to do, to carry that many syllables with that much force.
And that pop culture reference may be extremely dated in 50 years, but it's still going to hit you.
Yeah, it won't be dated to me. It's going to be carved in the fleshy tables in my heart, Dave.
Beautiful.
Okay, Dave, here's a song for you. This is a band called Quasi. I thought you might have heard of them. They've got some connection with Stephen Malkmus, and you'll hear it in a second here. The song is You Can Stay, But You Gotta Go. And this is basically a message for an 80-year-old Dave. That's that Lost Pavement B-side you never knew about, Dave.
I thought it was actually me singing for a few minutes.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know when I sang this track. I don't know what happened.
when I heard that song and listened to the lyrics, and I was like, oh my goodness, Dave could have made this song if he had an electric guitar.
Again, time travel. Maybe that was me. I don't know. How could I know?
Yeah, it's hard to know. But one day, Dave, something to look forward to 50 years from now, putting on Quasi for the great-great-grandkids. Check this out, kids. I made this. I don't know when, but I did.
So I was thinking about this today, Steele. Like right now, whatever like I do, whatever music I play, like my girls think is really cool, and it is like it, like I listen to pretty cool music, but like at what point will it go from being cool to just being like, this is so weird, Dad? Like why are you listening to Quasi? What is wrong with you?
It's gonna be probably seventh or eighth grade.
Man, having the power of introducing your kids to something you think is awesome is so cool. Like, of course, all my girls love the Beatles this week because I do. They all know John's the best, and that Ringo's also cool, and that really it's Paul's fault that they broke up.
That's the power of being able to brainwash a captive audience. Listen, girls, as long as you're in my home, my narrative about the Beatles is what goes.
I'm sorry, Paul. You do a lot of great work, too, but we know John was the coolest Beatle. Yeah. We know it.
All right, Dave, we got some book wisdom. It's been 50 episodes. Lay some memorable, life-changing book wisdom on us from the most uplifting author in American history.
Steele, I just read a novella by Steinbeck the other week called The Red Pony. Oh. I don't know if I talked to you about this one. Have you read that?
Yeah, brutal.
Yeah, The Red Pony. Like, this is great. I'm going to read about a boy and his pony. The pony dies. Like, this isn't even a spoiler. The pony dies like 10 pages into the novella. Yeah. The pony dies. It's horrible.
What'd you think of Billy Buck?
I liked him. Yeah, of course I liked him.
Gitano? Are you going to be Gitano 50 years from now? The old guy who wants to die on the ranch?
I hope so.
Yeah.
But I'm reading another Steinbeck right now. And I've never read The Grapes of Wrath before, so I'm about halfway through. I'm really enjoying it. It's been a while since I've read actual literature rather than just like plot-based fantasy. So it's been fun and interesting to read. But I'm just going to read a short passage.
I'll just say, Steinbeck's no Larry Niven, but we'll allow you to read this passage on the episode.
Yeah, with apologies to Larry Niven, we'll read some Steinbeck on the 50th. I'm sorry, Larry. I know you're hoping for it. All right. This is from nearly the very beginning of the book. It takes place starting in Oklahoma during the Dust Bowl. When the night came again, it was black night, for the stars could not pierce the dust to get down, and the window lights could not even spread beyond their own yards. Now the dust was evenly mixed in the air, an emulsion of dust and air. Houses were shut tight and cloth wedged around doors and windows, but the dust came in so thinly that it could not be seen in the air, and it settled like pollen on the chairs and tables, on the dishes. The people brushed it from their shoulders. Little lines of dust lay at the door sills. In the middle of that night, the wind passed on and left the land quiet. The dust filled air, muffled sound, more completely than fog does. The people lying in their beds heard the wind stopped. They awakened when the rushing wind was gone. They lay quietly and listened deep into the stillness. Then the roosters crowed, and their voices were muffled, and the people stirred restlessly in their beds and wanted the morning. They knew it would take a long time for the dust to settle out of the air. In the morning, the dust hung like fog, and the sun was as red as ripe new blood. All day, the dust had sifted down from the sky, and the next day it sifted down, and even blanket covered the earth. It settled on the corn, piled up on the tops of the fence posts, piled up on the wires. It settled on the roofs, blanketed the weeds and trees.
You love those beautiful, bleak, like hopeless, desolate descriptions of nature. There's something about like the love of the desert, like the desert's winning in this part of the story.
I do. I love it. One of the most interesting things about this book is every second or third chapter, he leaves behind the plot and he just describes different situations and places like this where these kind of things are happening that are just heart-wrenching. I mean, that dust ends up driving, you know, thousands of people from their homes, and that's what the book's about. It's very real. People go through hardship, obviously. Hard things happen. That's life.
Yeah, it makes me think in its own way of the contemporary refugee situation. You know, you've got these internal refugees during the Dust Bowl era, and we see this kind of climate change or precarious war driving people from their homes, and these decent, hardworking people being driven all over the world trying to find some place to live, trying to make a life, and it's tough, man.
And they were, in this book, I mean, in the 30s, they were treated like garbage, and they're not treated well now.
I know. They,
yeah, if you're running from that type of situation, people don't usually welcome you with open arms.
Yeah. So did you get some insight into the mind of the boss reading this? Understand the Tom Joad a little better?
Well, actually, what was more frustrating is I think we played maybe the Ballad of Tom Joad by Woody Guthrie. And I was like, what the hell, Woody? Couldn't you have said spoiler alert? Like, you're spoiling the whole plot with your song. Everything that's happened, like I knew happened because I'd already listened to the song. Thanks,
Woody's
Woody.
Like, I'm going to take a great novel and just tell you the whole plot in a song. The last 3 minutes, but it will ruin hours of your life.
Man, Woody stuck it to me. But great song anyway. Thanks, Woody.
Yeah, we should do that with the XXX sequel. We should write a 3-minute folk song that basically just tells the whole story of the day that comes out.
People would be so angry. People would be so angry.
But if it was good music, they might forgive us.
Not this day and age. You spoil something, you're the worst. Well, I think we've spoiled this whole episode.
Hey, don't forget your small talk challenge, Dave.
I would never forget the Panuma. It's haunting me already.
Well, Dave, I've loved the last 50 episodes. May we have 150 more.
Let's do it. Here's to another 50.
All right. Good night, Dave.
Good night.
Off the chain. Off the chain. Welcome to this world. It's off the chain.
Mission at midnight. We divvy it up there. I know almost all the words to that song.
Isn't Captain Jean-Luc Picard in that song?
Yes.
Oh.
My brother had the album. It was fantastic. There was a song on there about going to Mexico for spring break and visiting a prostitute and not being able to maintain an erection. That was like the whole song.
I don't know why you didn't pick that song. That's the one I'm going to be listening to in 50 years. That's going to be what I'm living.